Yeah, just one quick question on scallops before we go on. So the committee's now just going to take the scoping comments that we heard today and start crafting measures for Amendment 15. That's right. There's no need for further direction from the council. Committee's just going to go forth and start getting into the details.
Was there something you wanted to – anything additional that wasn't scoped or in the scoping document that you'd like to ask the committee to look at?
No, there's not. But as I've said before, if the habitat measures are going to be retained in there, my understanding is that the habitat committee will also be commenting on whatever recommendations the scallop committee might make for all the reasons that I'm not going to restate again.
Right. Yes. Is this on scallops? All right, Maggie, you didn't speak.
I just have a question, and that was with regards to the issue that was raised in scoping about the general category scallop trip limit, if that's going to be addressed in the framework or in the amendment. Thank you.
I think I heard Dave say that was one issue that the committee is going to look at. Dave?
Yeah, with the council's concurrence, as Sarah said, the other issues list, there were five or six items. The last three, you know, amendments 15 should include measures to address bycatch of sea turtles as directed by the BIOP. We're going to have to do that. But the final two were the ones that I pointed out that with the council's concurrence we would work on. And one of those is the possession limit in the general category, and the other is the adjustment to the observer set aside program.
Okay. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Habitat Committee met on May 16th, and the PDT met via conference call on May 8th. And the next PDT meeting will be on 6/11 in Plymouth, Mass., and the Habitat Committee will be meeting in July, sometime in early July. Habitat issues are, as usual, behind tab 7. And there are basically two parts of what we're going to go through today. The first part is phase one of the habitat amendment, edits, changes, and the continuous updates that will be required as new information comes in. This deals with phase one. The phase one issues are covered in under inclusion number one and inclusion number two. And then we have one issue that might be a little contentious that relates to phase one. And then after that, we'll be dealing with phase two issues, and that's in inclusion number three and number four. The first part is going to be phase one, and I'm going to turn that over to Chad to go through the edits, changes, and continuous updates required to phase one issues.
Can I ask for just a moment? Hang on. I'm not going to read the memo completely. It's not entirely all that interesting, but essentially what we've done is the committee approved the maps as they were, and then in discussion, and the council, I should say, as well, and then in discussion, there were a number of items that came up that were essentially inconsistent with the method that the council approved for designating essential fish habitat, and so they created some gaps that needed to be filled in kind of after the fact. And so this memo summarizes some of those gaps. They were unsurveyed 10-minute squares that were essentially, if you filled them in, you would make the essential fish habitat contiguous across an area. So there were a 10-minute square that was not highlighted simply because it was unsurveyed, but there was nothing inconsistent about the habitat in that area relative to the areas that it abutted, and those areas got filled in. Additionally, there were some ELMER coverages, some of the inshore estuarine coverages, that were integrated into the maps and highlighted some areas. Again, these were consistent with the method that the council selected for designating essential fish habitat, but they were not on the maps that the council had in front of them at the time that they were voted. So those areas had gotten filled in. There were some other gaps that were created where essentially level one and level two information were merged, and you got some kind of funky hard lines at one area with some depth contours that didn't quite meet up with those hard either 10-minute square boundaries or other boundaries. And so the areas in between there were filled in. There was nothing about those areas that would have been inconsistent with the intention of the method that the committee or that the council chose. And those areas have been filled in. Additionally, the minimum depth areas in coastal waters were corrected in the text descriptions to conform to the areas that the committee and the council had chosen for essential fish habitat. This is somewhat consistent with the discussions we had two council meetings ago when we revised the White Hake depth. There were a couple of other inconsistencies between the maps and the text descriptions, and those have been clarified in the document. And then there were some kind of miscellaneous corrections. This memo is essentially intended to keep everybody appraised of the corrections that we're making as we go, and we're keeping a tally that will be integrated into the omnibus phase one or the omnibus document that shows the changes as they've occurred from the time that the phase one document was approved all the way through to the time that the final document gets approved.
Thank you, Chad. The one issue that came up is that the issue over the deep sea corals, it's become for the committee, it's become sort of a continuing irritant because committee members are not really comfortable, to put it frankly, with using an inappropriate HAPC designation to protect deep sea corals. It does the job, but it's taken up too much of our time with trying to do this in a way that that frankly to many of the committee members seems a little on the sleazy side. So in an effort to do this the right way, and in consultation with Dennis Spitzbergen, who was there from the Mid-Atlantic Council, we decided to try to take some kind of action relating specifically to deep sea corals. And in light of that, what I want to do is put up a committee motion. And I'm sorry? Okay. I can't hear you, Chad. All right, Chad wants to clarify the HAPCs for us, so we'll do that. And then we'll get to the action item.
This is a presentation that I gave at the committee meeting, but I think it's important that the council get to see it as well. This is, and I gave this to the Mid-Atlantic Council in a modified form 2 months ago, but this will be basically the council's first opportunity to see the new approved HAPCs as they've been redrawn on the basis of the most recent council decision. And this, I think, helps set up the committee motion that Mr. Preble is going to talk about next. This will be very, very quick. The timeline is basically that the HAPCs were first voted at the June 2007 meeting. We had a first suite of HAPCs approved. The September 2007 meeting was the Great South Channel Juvenile Cod HAPC, and that was approved. And then at the November 2007 meeting, the Canyon Area HAPCs were revised. And again, this was on the basis of the fact that several of the areas had within their boxes areas that were not designated essential fish habitat for any species and therefore couldn't be an HAPC. So this will be the first time the council gets to look at the entire suite of 18 habitat areas of particular concern that were approved for phase one. They include the existing cod and salmon HAPCs, two seamount HAPCs, the Canyon Area HAPCs, which I've drawn as Georges Bank and Mid-Atlantic Canyon areas, the Great South Channel Juvenile Cod HAPC, and the Inshore Juvenile Cod HAPC. So here are the two prior existing HAPCs, the Juvenile Cod HAPC out at the Northern Edge and the Salmon HAPC. Here's the Juvenile Cod Great South Channel HAPC, and again, this is kind of the first chance for the council to get a look at how the motion was essentially a box, you know, framed by latitude and longitude, and it said all of the area within that box that contained juvenile cod EFH. So this is what the HAPC would look like in that area. And then we've got the inshore cod HAPC, the Cassius Ledge, Jeffers Ledge, Stowak and Bank HAPCs, the Georges Bank Canyon Area HAPCs. These would be Heason, oceanographer Gilbert Lydonia, hydrographer Veatch Canyon, Alvin and Atlantis Canyons. The Mid-Atlantic Canyon Area HAPCs, Hudson, Toms Hedrickson, and the Inter-Canyon areas, Wilmington, Baltimore, Washington, Norfolk. This again, this is a slide that the council's all seen before. The original box would be the complete area. The modified on the basis of the deepest EFH extent would be the blue line. So this just shows how these canyons have been cropped to form some of the the southern and eastern boundaries that now conform to depth contours rather than straight lines. And then here are the two seamount HAPCs, the gray boxes being the areas that the council wanted to consider for seamount HAPCs, and the blue areas inside them being the actual areas that are designated essential fish habitat for a species and are therefore the actual HAPCs. And so here's a composite map of all of the areas that, if the designations that were approved thus far were to go forward, would be designated as habitat areas of particular concern. And so that concludes this presentation and hopefully sets up the committee motion a little bit better.
Okay. All right. The committee motion, go ahead and put that up. Okay, the committee motion is that the council initiate a joint management action with the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council to protect deep-sea coral. As part of this action, the council would consider revising or removing the currently proposed HAPC designations in the canyon areas and seamounts in the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. There was a great deal of discussion over how to deal with this. And what we finally arrived at was that in order to do this the right way and still not eliminate protection for deep-sea corals, that it would be best to leave in the HAPCs until these deep-sea corals are properly protected. And we don't need to take it out anyway until the final document is approved by the council. What this has done really is to demonstrate the determination, at least to the committee, to protect deep-sea corals. So questions, comments?
Anyone on the council? Sally?
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize we were going to be taking action today in this regard and hadn't seen the meeting summary. I hope that everybody has the meeting summary, which is available online, but I didn't have a hard copy of it. So I guess my big picture concern is that we're still mulling over, working over, phase one. Not that I don't want to get it right. I do want to make sure that we get it right. But you know, I think a lot of people would just assume we keep doing this, keep going over and over and over. Phase one, keep, you know, hashing over these designations until they're perfect. And they're never going to be perfect. They never are. I'm glad that there's an effort to coordinate with the Mid-Atlantic Council to do something in these areas that have long been acknowledged as places that warrant special attention. And so the HAPC designations, I think, captured that. And I would say that they are not sleazy, but that they were the best available option that the council had at the time before the Magnuson reauthorization, which gave the council the authority, if it wanted to protect species other than managed species, and specifically corals. And there was a lot of very much on-the-table discussion during the Monkfish Amendment and during development of this HAPC, that there are few federally managed species that are in those canyons that give the council the handle that it needed to establish the designations that it felt and I believe still feels are appropriate, and then the subsequent protections based on those designations. I don't know if I'm going to support this motion or not. My inclination is not to. I can kind of guess how this motion might go. I see the good thing is that there's going to be more coordination with the Mid-Atlantic on this. The bad thing is these HAPC designations are barely on the table. I mean, they haven't even been submitted to National Marine Fisheries Service. And they're barely on the table, and now we're already talking about taking them off the table. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dave?
Yeah, thank you. These were the issues that were raised in the committee meeting, and one of the problems that we had was that the deep-sea corals are just as important in the intercanyon areas, and by using the incorrect designation, we aren't protecting that part of the outer continental shelf in the intercanyon areas. And another point of contention was over whether to take out the HAPC, the current HAPC designations, and it was decided not to do that. That took us quite a bit of hard negotiation to work that out. There were quite a few people in the audience particularly, but also even in the committee, that were arguing in favor of simply removing those HAPCs since they aren't really there for corals. And that was decided to not be acceptable. And at the same time, we needed to work out some way of broadly protecting not just the canyons, but also the intercanyon areas with respect to deep sea corals. The reauthorization of the Magnuson Act gives us the power to do that. That's something that's new, and we're trying to explore that and see if we can work out an action jointly with the Mid-Atlantic Council to accomplish this task. But it was decided to leave the designations in until that was complete. That's the intention of this motion, is to leave those HAPCs in as they exist right now, because we're not at all certain right now. This is at its initial stages. We're not at all certain that we're going to be able to come up with any meaningful action with the Mid-Atlantic Council, but we need to get it started. That's the point of this.
I had a question, Dave. So at this point, the concept is to leave the HAPCs in the omnibus, but also to scope for or find a way to work with the Mid to jointly develop a different way to protect the coral?
Yeah, that's correct. We're not completely clear on what that would be. Dennis said that that there was a great deal of interest in the Mid-Atlantic Council to do this, but we need to coordinate with them and decide what kind of an action would be appropriate. This would be an action under the new ability that Magnuson gives us to protect specifically deep sea corals under a different authority than with the HAPC designations. We have no intention of removing those designations at this time. But as we get into some means of protecting the deep sea corals along the entire margin, then these may become inappropriate. And the committee wanted to leave that intent in there that at some point we may consider. It says, and that's why we chose the words, very carefully chose the words, consider revising or removing the currently proposed HAPCs. That was we actually struggled at the last meeting to craft the HAP designations in such a way that we could protect the corals. But that still leaves the intercanyon areas unprotected, and we really need to move on that.
So essentially all this does is it keeps things status quo and says we think we need to work with the MID under a new action, utilizing the new protection afforded in Magnuson.
That's exactly correct.
All right. I would just have questions as to who takes the lead on the development of the document, what's the timeline, so on and so forth. But
All we need right now is to get the intent of the New England Council to enter into that kind of an arrangement with the Mid-Atlantic Council. We don't know how it'll be structured at this point because it's a brand new section of Magnuson that has not been used, and we need to explore that.
Okay.
And Dennis, he was the only person there from the MID, and he assured us that the MID was to some extent committed to doing this. And that's what we need to explore.
George Darcy.
Yeah, thank you. My first reaction was to agree with Sally, but hearing what I hear now, I may be okay with this. Hearing that you'd leave the HAPC in Phase 1 and you'd basically just be exploring further with the MID if additional areas need to be included under this new provision, which we frankly don't entirely understand yet, and that will need to be explored exactly how that works and how that tool would work for us. I think I'm okay with this.
Yeah, we that's what we want to do is explore the tool. It hasn't been explored yet, and there's been right along. There's been some real nervousness, at least within the committee, about using HAP's designations to do something other than what their stated purpose is. You know, we're doing it, but it's really the committee is not happy with it. So this is simply to explore the new tool, see where the new tool goes, see if it's applicable, and then take it from there. And if we do get a meaningful action to preserve the deep sea corals, then at that point we can look at the HAPCs. There's no need to remove them now anyway. So that's the intent.
Dave Gaethel, then Dr. Pierce.
I want to back up what Dave Fell said. I mean, the problem here is that when we get the revised EFH for White Hake and the depth changed radically from, I think it was 3,000 meters to 880 meters, you no longer had most of the areas with the coral in them. HAPCs have to be a subset of EFH. If there's no EFH, there can be no HAPC. And if you look at the boundaries of those now, they're not, because they don't go nearly as deep as they did when we were discussing Phase 1 originally, because of updated information, you're not really protecting much coral. And so that's why the committee felt that this was the appropriate way to proceed. I mean, you can leave them in Phase 1 for right now. They do something. They don't do much, but they do something as they're currently constructed. But if you really want to get at the root of the problem, you've got to get away from this HAPC thing, because it's not going to work for you in this case, because there's no essential fish habitat in the deeper water there.
Thanks for reminding me of that change of the White Hake. Dr. Pierce?
In light of the resources available to the council and everything we already have to do with all the other species we manage, what might be the timeline for our actually moving forward to develop a specific plan to protect deep-sea coral? Are we looking 5 years down the road we might have a plan? In other words, will the omnibus habitat amendment be in place well before we're ever in a position to have a plan developed and implemented to protect deep-sea coral? Any Any guess, Mr. Chairman?
Not a clue, Dave.
So if we had, I'm trying to work this through. I mean, we spent hours and hours and days on this particular issue, and we adopted, not in a sleazy way, but in a well-thought-out way, these strategies that would address deep-sea coral. And indeed, they're not perfect strategies, but we thought, and I think we still think, that they made sense, and they make sense. So if we were to pass this motion, would it essentially mean that we would be stripping out of the omnibus habitat amendment all options that relate to protection of deep-sea coral? Specifically, what I'm getting at is if we decide to do this, that would put us on some timetable for the development of a deep-sea coral plan, let's say 5 years down the road. Okay. Knowing that we're going to do this 5 years down the road, then it would seem hard to put into the Omnibus Habitat Amendment the HAP designations for deep-sea coral. I'm just trying to determine if this particular motion, if passed, is a de facto removal of the HAPCs for deep-sea coral from the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. It seems that it would do that, but perhaps I'm overreacting.
Well, first of all, my preference would be not to initiate an action, rather to explore a joint action between the Mid and New England, because we don't know the answers to the questions I've asked and you've just raised, David. I don't think this says the HAPC designations in Phase 1 are pulled out. It just says what says we could revise or remove, but that applies to every HAPC designation in Phase 1. You can revise or remove them right now.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I still think it sets a mindset. And the mindset would be, well, if we're going to put in place this plan for deep-sea coral, then why in the world should we have in the Omnibus Habitat Amendment anything that would relate to corals? I just think it's, again, a foregone conclusion that it comes out.
George Darcy.
Well, I think it probably would make most sense if you can do it is to address it in Phase 2. You can look at that new tool and decide if that's something that you want to do. It's separate from the EFH consideration, but it's certainly very closely related to it, and it has impacts on what you would do with the HAPCs that you're planning on including at this point. Whether you keep them, modify them, add to them, but all in the same action, so everybody can understand what the final result is.
Dave Preble?
Yeah, the problem here is that we're on really shaky grounds trying to protect deep-sea corals with essential fish habitat, or HAPC, since we don't have a management plan for deep-sea corals. They're not covered under any management plan. That's what we saw as the difficulty with that approach. So at this point, we've got the tool in Magnuson, and we want to explore how we can use it to protect deep-sea corals, which is what it's intended for. And as I say, these deep-sea corals are not covered right now. What Dr. Pierce said is absolutely correct, but they have no real protection right now, except, and I'm sorry that we're sleazy, perhaps a little too strong, but that was the sense of the committee. Was that it's just not simply not the right way to do things, and it doesn't really protect the corals by protecting something else that you may lose the protection on, as we've already seen when new data came in the canyon designations that we had. So we're just trying. What we want to do is explore doing it by the right pathway, the tool that we now have available to us that we don't know how to use yet because we haven't really read the instruction manual.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, what this really came down to is, Dave Pierce's point, we absolutely did not want to remove the current protections a day before replacing them with new ones. And what it came down to in my mind, if this is to be done under the Omnibus Habitat Amendment, in other words, in a timely fashion, It came down to what the reauthorization of Magnus and what tools that gave us by including explicitly deep sea corals in Magnuson, if we designated HAPC for the protection of corals in the habitat amendment, would that give us the control over all the fisheries in that area? And that seemed to be in doubt, and that's of course why we're trying to protect deep sea coral through white hake EFH and monkfish EFH. We're doing what we can, but in some cases, you recognize that it's at one level inadequate and potentially damaging because you're just going to push effort maybe on some more important deep sea coral habitat. So I think if maybe the service, George, can help, but if we designate HAPC now through the habitat amendment, for deep sea corals, can we protect those areas in phase two, or will that require a deep sea coral plan, which would be a separate action, and there would not be a need for this motion?
I think the answer is yes. You can keep the HAPC in, look at this new tool, include it in phase two, and either add to, under a different authority, add to the protection of the coral, but using the same regulatory action, just a different authority for that section. Or you could replace the HAPCs with protections under this new authority, also in the same action. But I'd like Gene's opinion on that, since this is new. We've had some discussions, but they're preliminary, and the agency at this point doesn't have any guidance that we're aware of as to exactly how to apply these. We're still working towards that.
I think George correctly summarized it. I think you do have that option. It appears to be a fairly broad authority to protect deep sea coral areas, just have to work through to what extent. Well, if you're doing it in an omnibus type amendment, then that gives you even broader justification, I think, to establish fairly extensive protection measures in those areas, and as well as geographical areas that you can designate.
Sally?
Yeah. I'm having a little bit of a hard time keeping a lid on things over here, but I just see this as delaying phase one, not just through this specific action, by suggesting that modifications could be done to other HAPCs, which we worked long and hard to get through the council. And we were theoretically done with that a year ago. And we extended it a little bit into a meeting that we had last September in Portsmouth. So by virtue of kind of cracking things open in phase one again, we're delaying phase two, and it just chips away at the comprehensive approach that we were trying to take through an omnibus amendment. This suggests that we initiate another action, and while there's some flexibility, a little bit of flexibility in the budget, I don't see a coral amendment, as being one of the top priorities that the council has identified right now. And I would suggest that by doing this, by approving this motion, we're even further slowing down the habitat amendment. Presumably, the Habitat Committee would consider this coral amendment, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe every single species committee would have to do that. I just see this as tying us up in knots for how many years before we actually do something in the canyons and for coral species that are important that are outside of the canyons. We have this new authority in Magnuson that was reauthorized a year and a half ago. Still need guidance on that. I would suggest that we need to build on what we started through the monkfish plan under the EFH authority and continue to use the omnibus amendment the way it was originally intended rather than tearing it apart before, you know, the thing even gets out the door. Thank you.
Dave Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I Sally's points are well taken, but the I don't see this as the problem that we have is that corals are not under any current management plan, and so there isn't really anything here that would involve an amendment to anything for deep sea corals. What we want to do is to explore what avenues are available within the reauthorized Magnuson, and I don't think that we really know that right yet. It's under Section 109-479. It has a completely separate paragraph right now. The paragraph B says to designate such zones in areas where deep-sea corals are identified under Section 408 to protect deep-sea corals, et cetera, from physical damage, et cetera, et cetera. And it's an entirely separate issue. I don't know that there's anything there to amend. At this point, we don't know how we include it with the habitat amendment. I'm not sure at all that this would be something that would be part of any current EFH or HAPC, since we really can't do that for coral. So at this point, it's just we just need to explore the options that we have available to us. And as far as what action is concerned, we use the term joint management action because we don't know what kind of an action it will ultimately turn out to be. Magnuson tells us what we can do, but it doesn't really tell us how to do it.
Anyone else on the council? Jim Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is one that I've been deeply involved in, even though I'm not on the committee. And I think everybody that's familiar, I don't think it was any intention on the committee's part to delay phase two. But this is to do a common sense approach to protect sea corals, and that is to deal with sea corals. We know we were on thin ice when we went out with the monkfish plan. I was looking for Phil Harron. I can't remember what year we included this protection to what we assumed to be the deep-sea coral areas from trawlable. We removed it from trawlable areas. Then we mirrored that in the mid-Atlantic with squid mackerel butterfish closures that are exactly the same. But it would not hold up in court if it was challenged. There's no legal support for it, I don't believe, because we're so far out there trying to deal with deep sea corals in a specific fisheries management plan. And what we're trying, we just did it again in last month in the mid-Atlantic for tilefish under the disguise of essential fish habitat. You closed areas. GRAs are going to be evolved around four canyons. Three of them are in the in New England. One of them's in the mid-Atlantic. So I've had some very in-depth discussions with the environmental community and some of the top people that I have faith in. And the common sense approach to dealing with deep water corals, knowing that they're long-lived, take estimates of 50 to 75 years to even exist. My idea on that, if it's takes 100 years to grow and it's there now, the only reason it's there now is because we couldn't get there to screw it up. Simple as that. So close the portion of the canyons that will protect the coral that exists, but don't extend it out 5 miles as a easier-to-enforce management measure and negatively affect dozens of fisheries. Take the time to sit down and determine where these areas are, how to protect them best. We're looking at about 125 fathoms and deeper from the outside edge of the canyon up, something that's realistic. In this day and age of technology, you could enforce it. There's no doubt you could enforce it. But this, I believe there's a lot of support from the environmental community on this approach. It'll do exactly what they're concerned with, and that's protecting the deep-sea corals. And I think Mid-Atlantic would like to be deeply involved with this because we got as many canyons as you do. So, I mean, I think that's the approach. I don't think it's meant to delay anything or put it off. But if, in fact, there's a better way to deal with it, if you go forward with phase two, and in a matter of a year or two, you could come up with actions here that would certainly supersede that. There'd have to be that discussion at some point. But I think everybody talking about exploring it is exactly what this motion is asking for, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I think what this motion says is if the council votes it up, that we are going to initiate an action. And it's a little different than exploring the best way to deal with the coral issue and how to utilize the new authorities we have under Magnuson to get that done.
to that point, Mr. Chairman, this has not been presented to Mid-Atlantic. So if you want to initiate it, you'd be doing it without Mid-Atlantic other than one vote on the committee. That I don't know that I would think it would be half of the action if this committee council supported it. It would still have to be presented to Mid for their determination and support of it, right, which I believe you'd get. But it doesn't. If you all pass, it doesn't mean it's going to happen. It just suggests that it is. That's my interpretation, but that's up to you. Thank you.
Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't we have to ask the service first if we have jurisdiction on the deep sea corals as another any other species? The service determines which council is the lead council and which council is going to be. So I think the first step is you have to ask the service if New England can be the council for deep sea coral.
Well, that applies to FMPs. This wouldn't be a new FMP, I'm assuming. You're talking about using an authority to take an action which I think could be either taken as an omnibus or attached to another action for a specific FMP. So I don't think we'd need to make that determination, but I think Jim's right. I think there'd need to be some joint agreement on this before it could go anywhere if you're going to include somehow the Mid and the New England in the development of this and approval of this.
Okay. I'm reading this to say it's not attached to an FMP. It's a new plan of some type, and I'm not sure what that plan is.
Dave.
No, what we intended with this motion was to do it in the omnibus habitat amendment in this action. So essentially, what we would need to do is get with input from folks at the Mid some designation in phase one of the area of concern, the what we would draw up as an HAPC phase one level. And then in phase two, along with everything else, make a determination as to what management action might be necessary in what part of that HAPC.
I read this the same way Frank did. To initiate, all right, start a joint management action with the Mid-Atlantic Council to protect coral. It doesn't say to work with the Mid-Atlantic Council to through the habitat omnibus process to protect coral. I see them as two separate things. Dave?
Yeah, again, maybe the motion could have been worded better, but my question to George and both George and Gene helped answer was, can we do this in an omnibus amendment, or do we need a separate deep-sea coral plan? And what I heard back was, no, you can do it in the omnibus. And that was the intent here, was to, okay, let's, you know, without taking 2 years of delay, in phase one, designate HAPCs for deep-sea coral explicitly based on what we know about deep-sea coral and not on white hake and monkfish and other fish that we manage.
Dave Preble.
Yes, Dave Simpson is exactly correct. Perhaps we can change the word that the council explore the possibility of a joint management action. We don't know what that management action would be right now, and that was one of the pieces of guidance that we wanted. Rather, it can be a part of the omnibus habitat amendment. It may be something totally separate. I'm not sure because it is separate in the reauthorized Magnuson, but it is something we need to explore. In order to move towards properly protecting the deep sea corals.
Take a 10-minute break.
What we didn't know when we put this first motion together, the one that went up today, was just what kind of legal authority we would have, whether we could even put it under the amendment. So that's been determined now, so we need to make a couple of little changes here. But one thing I'd like to point out is that in February, have you got that one to put up, the February motion?
Yes.
In February, the council had already taken action on this. Yes, there it is.
to direct the Habitat PDT to evaluate existing information on deep-sea corals and to develop management options to protect deep-sea coral habitat. It is understood that these options would be independent of any EFH and HAPC designations. That was passed on by this council in February, and the motion that we put up today is to put that into action. Now, what we didn't know at the time we put the motion today together was exactly what the nature of that action would be, and it was by no means clear to us that it would be that we could put it under the omnibus amendment. Now it appears that we can, so we need to perhaps change this a little bit.
Dave Simpson.
And with that, I'll offer a motion to substitute. That during phase two, the council will work with the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council to develop protections for deep-sea coral under the authority provided by the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion on the motion to substitute. Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. It's the intent of this that this protection for deep-sea coral be a part of the omnibus amendment, and it would be included under phase two. We're not going to go back and redo phase one in order to include this. This would be a separate action under phase two in order to protect deep-sea corals. That's the intent of this motion.
Thanks, Dave. Anyone in the audience? Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. This this motion to substitute is certainly better than most aspects of the first motion. What bothers me greatly is in phase one, we talked about that that's where the science would be done, and then phase two would be where the management measures occurred. And now we're talking as if phase one is a done deal, even when evidence comes up that the science is no good. These HAPCs are a total fraud. We knew that in phase one, and they're even worse than they initially were done because of the EFH changes. They don't even encompass the majority of the type of habitat that corals exist in. It's just foolish to keep bad data in this document. This motion should also just take those HAPCs and remove them. They just serve no function. They just make us totally distrust the science, the entire process. And at the meeting, we heard that they're working on the final DSEIS for phase one, when all the time we were told that nothing's a done deal until we finish with phase two. So I personally, representing industry, think this whole thing is a fraud. It would be a lot more honest process if you guys removed those HAPCs right now. And it would be, to me, this is bureaucratic. You already have the tool with a motion to protect the corals today. And it's very simple. The vast majority of the corals are deeper than 350 fathoms. You have the data to present it to you time and time again. And the vast majority are between the canyons. Just make a motion that says that all waters deeper than 350 fathoms will be a coral research zone and will be closed to bottom tending gear unless the gear is certified to have no impact on corals. Period. End of story. Let the PDT provide the documentation to support it and done. And then you don't waste any more time with 12 HAPCs that are a fraud, analyzing them, documenting them. I mean, just get on with protecting the corals and stop this game. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. We support this motion. I think it's going to give the corals the attention that they need as quickly as possible. Initiating a separate action would drag on and go through the priority process and may be a mistake. Attaching this to phase two is the right thing to do. I think that there may be need for, I guess it would be section, a discussion of section 408 I don't know whether it would need to be added to phase two or phase one, which is the discussion of the science behind the presence of corals, which is one of the precursors to using the new authorities in Magnuson. But I think that that can be rolled into phase two, document the corals, and take some action to protect them. This is the right thing to do. Thanks very much.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries 15-0-0. Dave, anything else?
Actually, yes. But nothing else I think is contentious. The other thing is we need to inform the council, keep the council up to date on what's going on with the risk analysis. And for that, we need to go to inclusion 3 and 4. The risk analysis that has been decided upon, we had to decide between doing what's referred to as an environmental risk assessment or a vulnerability analysis. The decision has been pretty much made to go with the latter. When we sell it as an environmental risk assessment, there are some requirements, legal requirements that we may not be able to reach. And it's one thing we should understand is that we're not really strictly required to do this at all. But we need to make sure that before we do any kind of action that may have the effect of restricting any fishing activity, that we're on the absolute firmest possible ground. So what we've determined is that we're going to use a qualitative numerical matrix. And the stage we're at right now and what we're going to be working on over the next month is to come up with the data fields required in the analysis. And the data fields as they stand right now, broadly speaking, is going to be the gear types, fishing intensity level, habitat types, which will include geological, biological, deep-sea coral, and prey, and then recovery / resilience, and the last one is natural disturbance. There are two things that are still open to discussion. And one of those is the recovery resilience. Recovery and resilience are really two different things. Recovery involves the time after disturbance for any benthic habitat to return to the way it was. Resilience is really the ability of that bottom to come back to the kind of habitat it was. It may be something different, as we've seen so many times with land-based ecosystems. So that has to be worked out. And then there's another one that we need to look at, which is non-fishing anthropogenic stressors, which may in fact wind up being another data field. So that's where we are right now is in determining what the data fields will be, and then the next thing is to assign a numerical evaluations to each one of the data fields, and that will be based as much as possible upon hard data, and as little as possible on professional expertise sort of thing. So that's quickly where we are right now.
Okay. That's it for habitat?
Yeah, unless Chad wants to throw something else in. I was trying to go through that last part as quickly as possible because I know we're quite a bit behind schedule. Go ahead.
Nothing.
Yeah, we're all set.
Okay. Thank you. Adam Eisenberg's not here, is he? No, okay. Then we're going to go right into the presentation, the discussion of the agency's proposed rule to address MSRA requirements for annual catch limits and accountability measures. It's the 11:30 agenda item.